Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Welcome everybody out there, all you football fans. Welcome to Offside. Terry Fenwick here with Adrian Romain and Kerry. Some terrific football we've got to look forward to and talk about this evening. And as we've just touched on the Manchester United, Leeds United game there, what's known in the UK as the War of the Roses. Leeds United, the White Rose, and Manchester United's Red Rose going, clashing hard together. Rivalry between the fans is just unbelievable. But lots to talk about tonight, Adrian, and we've got a very special guest coming on later on. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, good afternoon to all our listeners. Welcome to Offside again once on this lovely Monday afternoon on Freedom 106.5. Nevertheless, Terry, as you said, we have a packed show today. We have CFU President Randy Harris is joining us.
We have
to touch on local football. We need to get in depth in terms of the national selection criterias. And also we have a rising star talent. It's a packed show.
Yes. Looking forward to that. And we've touched on the Premier League, of course, and some of the games that are coming up. Remember, Adrian, it's only a week ago since Arsenal were 8 points clear at the top of the league. That 8 points has been drilled right back to 3 points. Mm. So have the wheels come off?
Yes, I think so, Terry. I think that there is a lot of changes that has happened in the last few weeks, especially reading our memo. We saw 12 points.
Yeah.
Then we saw 8 points. Now it's 3 points.
Yes.
So it's showing that the race is really and truly stiffening up in the English Premiership.
Absolutely. And you've got Arsenal at home to Manchester City on the 15th, which is Friday coming. And Wednesday, sorry. And that is everything's on that game, because I think if Manchester City get the result that they want at the Emirates, I think they will go on to win this league. I mean, they've come from nowhere again. They've had a few upsets themselves, Manchester City. Pep Guardiola's galvanised the side all over again. And this has been on the back of all the problems and issues they've had behind the scenes with the different transfer fees and all of that in contention. But it's a massive game, that one, Adrian, and it could well be winner takes all.
Yeah, Terry, and I remember 3 weeks ago we mentioned this fixture.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to work out how can Arsenal be stopped. But we have seen a lot of other teams being brave in terms of stopping them and changing Arteta's whole philosophy and his tactics and how he approaches games. And now we are seeing that Pep has the opportunity to do the business for himself on Wednesday.
Absolutely. And that was a great result for Everton last week, bringing a new manager in, Sean Dyche, to get a 1-0 win over Arsenal last weekend. Unfortunately, they've played today. The Merseyside derby went on today, and it was 2-0 to Liverpool over Everton. So a little stutter start for Sean Dyche and his Everton side. Mm. But that is a big, big result for Liverpool, who needed that badly. My God, I've been listening to the fans and social media.
But Manchester United looking good.
Yeah.
Based on the highlight that we just listened to, what are your thoughts? What do you think about that?
Well, I just think he's done a remarkable job, Ten Hag, because Manchester United, the biggest football club in the world, have had all of their problems and issues in the dressing rooms in the past with Pogba and Ronaldo. He's really ironed out all of the problems they've had behind the scenes. Mm. He's got a very young, upcoming squad, and even players like Harry Maguire that he left out that have took a lot of stick over the last 18 months, 2 years, really, at Manchester United. He's galvanised the whole squad. They believe in themselves all of a sudden. They're winning games. They've gone 13 games at home winning, which is brilliant.
Because they're moving up the table, right?
Correct, yeah.
So they are just on a winning streak.
I think they've done a great job. And you can't take it away from Ten Hag. I think he's looking like one of the top coaches in the world today. Mm. And he's turned Manchester United around.
Yeah, and to be honest, I have seen his maturity in terms of his transfer policies.
Yeah.
We mentioned it first on our first show, how he dealt with Rashford's scenario, how he dealt with Cristiano Ronaldo. He has really showed very silently that he's a leader. And And to be honest, his dressing room is back in him, and I'm excited to see how well they will do this season and where they will finish. Because if we are something that we are ignoring, and this is for our listeners as well, is that they are in all competitions.
Yes.
They are in all competitions. He's actually in a final. They are in the final, they are in a cup final. So he's and there's no noise in Old Trafford again. They are just being successful.
Yeah, the fans are enjoying it because he's turned it round. He's turned the concept around of the whole football club. It's now very positive where it's been negative over the last couple of years. But yes, Adrian, they've got to the League Cup final. They play Newcastle United. That's going to be a great game.
Mm-hmm.
That's potentially third and fourth place in the Premier League playing off in the final.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a great game because of the monies that have been allowed at Newcastle United. Mm-hmm. Them can't ignore. They're having a great season as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
They've turned things around. But Manchester United, you know, all over the world, there's such a big support base.
Mm.
And thank God they've now got something to appreciate and to back.
Yeah. It's just about 6:15, and I know we have a lot of Manchester United fans down here, and diehard fans are talking about it.
Yes.
So, guys, you can get into the conversation. You can send us a message on 306-1065, or you can even call us and tell us what you thought about the highlights. Tell us what you thought about the game. Give us your insight, because we know what we are talking about here, but you may have something else that you noticed that, you know, we probably might have missed. So we'll be taking your calls as well, 627-3223, 625-2257. We're talking about Manchester United,
yeah.
Like one of the biggest football clubs in the world. And in every single country around the world, there are fans.
Yes, of course.
I could reckon about that.
Well, I think, Kerry, what people are not recognising here, Sir Alex Ferguson went through all of these same issues and problems with the Manchester United team that he took over all them years ago. Recognised that he was the Manchester United coach for 29 years, longest standing coach in the Premier League.
Mm.
And he brought through all of them top young players. And that was your Beckhams, your Giggs, your Scholes, all of these top class players came through. And that was the basis of the Manchester United success story. I'm seeing the same thing, Adrian, with Ten Hag. He's bringing all these youngsters out. What we've seen from Marcus Rashford over the last month, 6 weeks, has been astonishing. Something that I never thought we would see from this fella. But clearly what's happening on the training ground is not just about technique. It's about their mentality, how you get into their heads. He's obviously getting there. This is Ten Hag. To make sure they're performing at their very best every game.
Yeah, Terry, and I think their mentality has changed as well.
Yeah.
Because the reality is they need to get out there and represent their fans. As Carrie rightly said, every country has Manchester United fans. They have done a lot of marketing over the years.
Yeah.
And now I know for sure, especially in Trinidad and Tobago, we will be happy with a lot of Manchester United fans will be happy with what's happening now, because they have seen a big improvement in the Manchester United performance thus far.
Well, listen, mate, it's an easy one for Trinidad and Tobago because we can't ignore Dwight York. What a player he was.
My gosh.
And on the basis of Dwight York leaving Aston Villa, going to Manchester United, the biggest football club in the world, and for me, Dwight was always not just a great player, he was a very humble young man doing a good job under a great manager. And of course, throughout the Caribbean region, that's where a lot of the support, Manchester United support, I think, has come, because one of our own has been up there doing their bit and done great things. My God.
Just about 18 minutes past six. What are your thoughts on the game that was played with Manchester United? I know that you have a lot of insight. You have insight. You want to discuss it, because, I mean, you don't have a set of football fans here, you know. You understand? And sometimes I feel out of my place, but it's really nice to sit down and hear you explain, Terry, and hear you give your analysis. Because, I mean, this is offside.
Yeah.
You understand? Hold the line. You still holding the line?
Absolutely.
Call us and let us know. 627-3223, 625-2257. Let's see who's there. Hi, good evening, you're live.
Hi, Hi, good evening.
Hey, what's up?
I'm great. I just want to say it's a pleasure to finally talk in person to Mr. Fenwick.
Mm-hmm.
I have been following his career since the 80s. So it's a privilege for me. But
it's my pleasure.
I'm not a sports fan.
Okay.
I am a Manchester United fan, and I just want to just disagree with you all for a bit. I've been following United since 1984.
Right.
When they were suffering. So I'm a diehard United fan, and Dwight didn't have anything to do with that, even though he was a great player.
Yes. Mm.
So cheers, guys. Thanks for a great show.
All right. Thank you so
Thanks
much.
For
Thanks for your contribution. I have a message here. Ten Hag has done great work on the mental side, even with Jadon Sancho coming back into the team and scoring after some issues earlier in the season. You're familiar with those names, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's a good point by him, because I think Jadon Sancho just came as a player that was, his name was being mentioned in Europe.
Yes. Oh.
But now he basically has polished him and he's repaying his manager.
That's right. He's put him in the background. He took him away from the first team, settled him down, got into his head. He's now got the young man playing to his abilities, which is fantastic. But if I could just go back over the years here a bit. Manchester United, great side, always had a massive support, and this is going back to the Sir Matt Busby's of this of the Manchester United history. But you've got, people don't realise Sir Alex Ferguson, why he was so good.
Right.
Was because he'd go and knock on your front door. He'd go and chase players down. He was looking at schoolboy football in the UK, and when he saw a great talent, it wasn't sending a chief scout.
Nice.
It was Sir Alex Ferguson. You imagine them parents opening their front door, and you've got Sir Alex Ferguson that everybody around the world recognises, and he's there trying to sign.
Of course. Let's take this call really quickly, Terry. Hi, good afternoon, you're live.
Good evening, ladies and
gentlemen. Hi, evening, what's up?
Hi, okay. I am a Manchester fan, not the United, the other one. One of them.
All right, no problem. What's your thoughts on the game?
Well, United didn't on Rashford, prolific goal scorer, this morning, and he more or less carrying them. So, in every game, practically scoring a goal for them. So, that's why they are playing in the league at this moment in time.
Yeah, that's a good point you're making there, because he's had a tremendous last... Since they come back from the World Cup, he's been outstanding.
He goes scoring the ball at the time. I think he has a leg injury. I don't know if he starts on Wednesday.
Well, he'd be a big loss if he doesn't start on Wednesday. And Marcus Rashford, he would be missed.
Not Rashford, is Haaland.
Ah, okay, Haaland.
Haaland has a leg injury, yes, that's...
Well, some of the Manchester City fans are saying that Haaland, because, and he's a great player, don't get me wrong, I think he's outstanding centre forward, probably the best in the world today. But they're saying he's interrupting the Manchester City style of player. They're having to go more direct than they've done before. Of course, under Pep Guardiola, whether it's been Barcelona, Bayern Munich, or now Manchester City, it's a passing game, it's possession football. They're having to change things up now for Haaland. What do you think?
That's the truth, because if you can incorporate things like that, I mean, it's a waste, because at the end of the day, as you say, that's for the pick goal scorer.
Yeah.
He started off really well, scoring a lot of goals.
Yes.
And now he's off the ball. But he had a good pass yesterday, like when the one scored.
Yes. Well, I do think Pep Guardiola, I think he's a great coach. I think he's probably the best coach in the world today. And I know he will be working double hard in the background. Manchester City, all of their players, it's a relatively young squad that they've got. Some excellent players from around the world. But Pep will make sure, I'm sure, that he's got an Ireland working hard to join in with the similar style of player.
You have to get Alan fit, because at this moment in time, the only thing I could see Pep trying to win right now, Champions League.
Yes, well, that's coming up right now, yeah. And that, of course, is the competition that you Manchester City fans have missed out on. That's what you need to be winning, I think. That's the next step for Pep Guardiola and Man City. What do you think?
Yes, that's the thing. Because at the end of the day, we don't know this club, Cavani, in the West City right now. Why is he out of that? So, at this moment in time, the practical thing to do is to try to go for the UEFA Champions League.
Yeah.
I mean, we lost Cancelo, so I don't know what's going on with the defense. Akanji and company, sometimes they'll just have to cut it back. So, I mean, they've got to work on that defense really good.
Yes.
Because I did Manchester was born of it. Thanks,
yeah,
thank you so much.
Some good points.
Terry, look, somebody now throw some talk fear here. Terry side, Tottenham HS got a whooping.
We did, yeah.
4-1, right?
Well, can you believe, listen, Kerry, the week before, we play Manchester City.
Mm-hmm.
At home, we beat them 1-0. They've dominated the play, really. They've had most of the possession of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought this was a terrific game, and I thought this should have been a basis from Tottenham Hotspur to work forward to, you know, get back on the scene. And within 7 days, we get 4-1 away to Leicester, who are in the bottom five of the Premier League. I can't understand what's going on there, because we've got such good players across the board. We've had a bad injury to Bantam Kerr, who I think is a great midfield player there. We're gonna miss him. But to beat Man City one weekend, set your stall out. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're all about. That's Conte. He's a great coach.
Mm.
And then go away to Leicester and get beat 4-1. My God, that's so indifferent. Yeah.
I know you felt.
Well, I didn't come out. Listen, I haven't been out to Carnival at all. It's Carnival Trinidad, forget it, mate. I'm still a Tottenham fan, suffering.
Terry, but I think most importantly is that the consistency of Tottenham, that's very, it's not happening this season.
No.
And we need to be honest that something that we look forward to is the January transfer window, and they haven't brought in much quality.
No.
So I guess a lot of weekends you will be indoors. Because it's really sad that they are not given, really, the owners isn't given the manager the backing that he expects.
Hmm.
But I really want us to touch on West Ham and Chelsea result and those other results, because I think we had a packed weekend and we are short on time in terms of getting into Randy Harris interview. So
Well, at the weekend we had West Ham Chelsea 1-1, Arsenal 1-1 with Brentford, which I thought that was an outstanding result for Brentford.
Yeah.
Crystal Palace 1, Brighton 1, that's a South Coast derby there. Fulham 2, Notts Forest 0. That has Fulham in sixth position of the Premier League. This is a team that everyone was expecting to be relegated.
Right.
They're sixth off top, Adrian. What a fantastic season they're having at the moment. Leicester 4, Spurs 1. God.
You should raise your voice a little more for that.
Southampton got beat at home 2-1 against Wolves. Wolves are having two or three great results of late. Bournemouth 1, Newcastle 1, a good result for Newcastle on the road down at Bournemouth. We've just been listening to the Leeds 0, Manchester United 2. City 3, Aston Villa 1, which I think everybody expected that result. That's a good result for them. And of course, just earlier on today there, we had Liverpool 2, Everton 0. That was the results over the last games. And of course, we've got some cracking games coming up. We've just mentioned Arsenal Man City coming up on the 15th, Wednesday. That's going to be nail-biting, that one.
Mm. Well, I have a voice note to play here from someone. Let me see if I can get that up and running.
Good night, Caribbean and to Terry there and Romain. A great program as usual. Yes, that game with actually Tottenham Hotspurs, they actually had 52% of ball possession. Leicester only had 48%. And of course, they would have gotten a serious trash in there. And the interesting thing about it is that Leicester City, they are actually at number 7, 6 or 7 on the table. So I kind of was kind of interesting to see that they got that whooping. All right, let's see what's happening. I think they have 25 points now. And of course, Hotspurs was still on 39.
Yeah, 39.
Great program as usual.
And Leicester City in 13th position. They've creeped up the table there because they were there in the bottom three.
Yeah, but that was a good contribution by Mdotieri because what he said is that Tottenham had the percentage, the greater percentage of possession, and then it basically flipped. I must give a thumbs up because they have contributed really and truly tremendous this afternoon in terms of us guiding giving us proper knowledge of what transpired over the weekend.
Yeah, well, obviously I was very disappointed with the 4-1 scoreline, but I just think that typifies Tottenham at the moment. Defensively, we've been very frail, and this Leicester side with the likes of Jamie Vardy in the side. Jamie, what a great player. My God, Leicester City bought him for £1 million. That is a steal of a deal in anybody's eyes. Won the Premier League with Leicester, of course. But we just look with Eric Dier at the back. When he's on his own at the back there, he looks brittle. I'm not so sure about him there. But defensively, we crumbled at the weekend. 4-1's not good enough for a Tottenham Hotspur side, Kerry.
All right, it's just about 6:30. We are going to jump on a break. But Adrian, would you remind us who would be joining us when we come back from the break?
Yes, listeners, we have Randy Harris, CFU president, will be joining us in the hot seat. We are on offside. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. And you are here on offside. It's Freedom 106.5 every Monday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. I'm Adrian Romain, and with me is Terry Fenwick.
How are you, mate?
And we can't leave out Carrie.
Of course not. But introduce our guest.
But we have someone in the hot seat, a man that is very powerful in our Caribbean football, in CONCACAF football, in Barbados football. And to be honest, he's the man that really and truly I've decided to bring in our hot seat because he has a lot to say. There's a lot happening around the Caribbean. He's the boss. So let's welcome Randy Harris. Good afternoon,
hey,
Mr.
Randy,
President.
Hey, Randy. Good afternoon.
Hi, Randy.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
We are good. We are good. What's up?
I'm fine. Everything's going well.
Yeah, Randy, we are seeing that happening. I'm seeing that you have restarted the Barbados Football Association league. It's in its fourth week. A lot of things is happening in CFU. I'm really impressed with the refereeing department where you have given so many referees the opportunity in the Caribbean, and we must say you have a lot, so tell us more.
Well, let us start with the referees. We always emphasize development for our players. But if our players, if we get them up to be quality players and we don't have good, credible referees in the middle, it will affect our game negatively. So that's a part in the Caribbean that we have been, I don't want to use such a strong word as neglecting, but we intend to have referees courses until we get some refereeing in the 2026 World Cup that will be held in this part of the world.
Very good. Andy, Randy, sorry, this is Terry Fenwick. Delighted to have you on the show. And several things here, because listen, the public at large, then they don't know really what goes on in football, what happens behind the scenes, what you guys at your level have got to put up with to try and get football off the ground into the, you know, we've got a very, we've got a terrific footballing public in the Caribbean region. But because of all of the islands, it's very difficult to get our own football off the ground. And we're suffering ourselves at the moment in Trinidad and Tobago. We only just launched our TT Premier League last Monday. That doesn't look like starting until
March,
first week in March. But I think the public at large, Randy, they don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I'd love you to throw a little bit of light on how you manage the situation in Barbados and how you've brought that through, not just Barbados, but the Caribbean region. I think you've done a terrific job there. Just throw a little bit of light on that for us, please.
Well, first of all, football in the Caribbean, when it comes to regional football, we are butting our heads on a wall because with the collapse of LIAC, we now have an extra big problem with traveling. It was bad before, but now it is horrible. Many of the teams in the Caribbean, even to play games against their neighbors, have to travel up to Miami or New York and then come back down to play in fixtures.
Yes.
That weighs heavily on football and, spreading our football family and linemen together in the Caribbean. It is really a horrible situation. However, our leagues that were affected tremendously by COVID are starting one by one.
Yes.
And of course, everybody, including the players and spectators, are really excited about the restart of football. Here in Barbados, we are witnessing some of the biggest crowds to watch football in recent times. And also the same thing is happening in Antigua and St. Kitts.
Very good.
I think the layoff has worked for us in one way, but obviously our footballers are jaded and trying to get back into stride after such a long layoff. I think Trinidad and Barbados were extra strict when it comes to the COVID regulations. Our regulations were only lifted months after the other island. So we are looking forward to some serious activity in the Caribbean. And as you know, the remaining matches of the CONCACAF Nations League will kick off in the third week of March. So everybody is preparing and things are looking forward.
So Randy, again here, I mean, for the public at large listening in on this show tonight, what is your game plan? What is your plan of action on the ground in Barbados? Just to give us an idea of what all of the footballing islands throughout the Caribbean region, what are they working on? How are they engaging with their potential sponsors and corporates from their same islands? How are you manipulating, moving things forward there to get the very best for your youngsters on the ground in Barbados? Because I've read a little bit about you over the last two or three days, and your mission statement is excellent. Love it. And it shows the passion and commitment that you've got for youngsters within Barbados and indeed the Caribbean region. Can you tell us what are you doing on the ground to make it work? Not just for the kids out there that are playing, but for the corporates that you need to back you.
Okay, well, let us look at the programs first. The truth is that our quality of football at the national level has gone through a kind of rough period with some horrible results sometimes. But what we're doing to counteract that, we've noticed a lot of things going on with our young footballers, both male and female. And one of the main things is that it is, as you would know, Terry, you have the experience, it is very difficult to make your way as a professional in football.
Yes.
And we have formed a career hub for youngsters in Barbados. To give them hope, we can guide them and give them alternate opportunities in their young lives going forward. We are dealing with them, those who are academically inclined.
Yep.
We have made some contacts in the UK, believe it or not, and North America, where at some universities and other technical colleges. And basically, we are working with the youngsters to find out what are their interests, what keeps them boiling. And we are working on those areas. I think that this has given us a fillip because our corporate partners are happy when we work with the youth like that, because they can see our vision of not only building good footballers, yes, but also good citizens. So we are doing things like that. We are just about introducing an academy, a special academy. We have some coaches there from Portugal that will run the academy. And the whole idea to basically prepare these youngsters from early with, you know, getting them to understand and use their football intelligence. And hopefully in a couple of years to come, we will have some players from Barbados playing outside of Barbados and making a living from football.
Brilliant.
Terry, the biggest problem here in the Caribbean is that for the most part, we are mostly amateurs.
Yes.
And if we remain amateurs, what is going to happen with Victor Montagliani's one CONCACAF is that we will always be second. When amateurs play against professional people, the CFU has come up with an ambitious project to give more players in the Caribbean an opportunity to play football. And I will go into it if you need me to, but I believe it is the practical way of giving many more footballers from the Caribbean an opportunity to play professionally and earn a living.
Yes, Randy, we'll really love you to touch on it, because that was my follow-up question. I really want to know what's your plan, because we have seen that a lot is far behind from the rest of CONCACAF teams, especially in this ongoing under 17 tournament, where it's really tough for the kids. So I would like to know, and we would like to know, and our listeners will love to know, what is the plan with the CFU in terms of, will we get these kids playing active football again?
Yeah, well, we have three countries in the Caribbean, three member associations that have the experience of managing and administering professional football, namely Jamaica, Dominican Republic, and Trinidad and Tobago. It is very difficult for a country, say, like Barbados or Dominica or St. Lucia, that don't have big conglomerates that would pump money into football in a way that, you know, would be commercialized.
Yeah.
So what we have done, we have said, well, there are professional clubs in the Caribbean, in those countries. What we will do is to help them with their funding and management of the competitions. But in return, we want them, if they have a roster, say, of 25 players, to out of those 25 players, select 8 who are not domiciled in those countries.
Right.
So it gives, if we have 10 teams in one place, it gives an additional 80 players from the Caribbean an opportunity to play some football and be happy for what they like doing and for which they have the talent to do. So we have had a commitment already from our confederation. And obviously, we don't want to start something that will finish in a year or two.
Yes.
So right now, we're doing the research and data into making it sustainable. So that is where we are at the moment. We have submitted our proposal to CONCACAF. There is a committee that is looking at it. So next week, when we are at the CONCACAF Congress, we will have additional information to share.
Brilliant. I love the sound of that, Randy. And for me, you know, it's 23 years I've been in Trinidad and Tobago, so I'm well familiar with the Caribbean region in general and the quality of players that we've had over the years that I've been here. And a lot of what you're saying there makes a lot of sense to me, because, yes, the rest of our CONCACAF region are moving away from us because of the development programs that they've now had in place for 5 to 7 years. When you look at Canada, USA.
Yeah, you just got to look at Canada. Canada had a 12-year program.
Fantastic.
And it is bearing fruit. And the players are still youthful.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have to really think about the game.
Of course.
And its development. That's where we're lacking.
Well, what we've also looked at is we've just gone through World Cup in November, December. The United States national team, their captain, 23-year-old, when the next World Cup comes round in the CONCACAF region, they're going to be all at their... Absolutely, they're going to be top-class players. But coming back to my point there, Randy, which I love from you, was it's really for these youngsters that we've got on the ground in Trinidad and Tobago and indeed all of the islands up the Caribbean, it's about a development, social development programme, really, where we're looking at scholarships, possible professional contracts if they're good, but it's getting them outside of the Caribbean where they can push their career on much quicker than they can here. You agree with that?
Yeah, of course, Terry, that we must look to develop them in a way that we can get them out of our countries. The thing is, not only a lot of them will be able to help their families and also elevate themselves.
Yes.
And if we are the football managers, we have to look out for the interests of our players first. And we are here to give them good service. That is the only way we can do it, by having these programs for proper development.
Brilliant.
And Terry, I must say here, because some people get offended, we need to concentrate on coaching education. We have a lot of nice people in the Caribbean.
Thank you. Yeah.
Who look at youngsters from their communities and help them out to get together, you know, and get off the streets.
Yeah.
But they're not trained to coach.
No.
And that becomes a problem, because players grow, mature, and they don't understand the basics of the game.
Yes.
So coaching education is paramount at this time for as many people as possible. You don't have to really be into football at this time, but you can do the courses, get certified, and then the young people will get some real help. In other words, you don't ask the postman to teach your child at school.
Correct.
So I think, Randy,
I mean, you're touching on this, it's great, because people are not recognising the technology and the science that's going into football and sport in general today. And sometimes within the region, Caribbean region, we bypass that because we've not got the ability, we've not got the finances behind us to engage in that side of it. But that's where sport is going. These youngsters that we've got on the ground, yes, they might have good skill sets, they might have been brought up on the local savannah where they've got a good touch or whatever, but they're not being engaged with the technology of the game anymore, or the science of the game, where these kids are brought up. They're like machines today, Randy.
Yeah, of course. I agree wholeheartedly. And the thing is, a lot of them don't seem to be as committed in the Caribbean as in the past. And I think a big part of that is that we don't have the resources really to provide for the footballers like they deserve.
Yeah.
And it is a different era. You know, footballers want the most expensive cell phones. They want everything that life can provide for them, you know.
Of course.
And the commitment, the preparation, working on the weaknesses on their own.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see it at this time, but I'm hoping that we can do things to try to encourage them in this direction.
So, Randy, with that, with your corporates, for argument's sake, up there in Barbados, how do you reach out to them? What is your game plan as far as bringing your corporates on side with your youth development schemes? Because I agree with you wholeheartedly here. all of everywhere in Trinidad, all of your big business, they want to engage with the kids. They want to be seen to be doing good things with the kids. How are you guys dealing with that up there? What's the game plan for you fellas on that?
Well, the truth is that in Barbados, we are fighting against the odds. Cricket is king. And cricket is only king because officialdom makes it king. I mean, we produce some of the best cricketers in the world in Barbados. Yes. So that is nostalgic. As far as football is concerned, there are many more youngsters playing football. Yeah. And there are many more people coming to support football. I think that we in the Caribbean went through a really crazy period before 2015. And corporate Barbados still look at us with, as the Trinese would say, cocky eye. You know, they want to be sure that we are compliant. They want to be ensured that we are operating and administering football in our respective countries with credibility. And that will take a while because you know what has happened, and that has been going on for quite a while. It is something that we in CONCACAF and the Caribbean have worked on. I think we have come a long way, but people are still waiting to see if this kind of quality management will continue. So we have to roll with the tide.
Yes.
And basically what you're speaking about is the commercializing of the game.
Yes.
Which is very, very important. And the truth is FIFA has been given support in these areas. I mean, come on.
Good.
In small islands, how many companies turn over $4 or $5 million a year?
Yes.
And that is what we are doing as football associations.
Yeah.
And if you are doing that, it must be managed properly. In other words, you must have professional people managing your organization for you.
Yeah.
If not, you know, we won't make the most of what we are going. And Terry, the other thing is that FIFA, I don't think FIFA will continue to give us those sums of money forever. So we have to look to be self-sufficient, so that when that time comes, we won't be like the governments who were expecting England to continue buying sugar and bananas, and then the WTO says, oh, that is not fair, and everything crashed.
Yeah.
What we must do is to try to be self-sufficient. So that we can, I think FIFA has given us a great foundation.
Yeah. Well, I think there, Randy, as well, and you've touched on it. You, as president of the CFU, how do you, and this is, you touched on it earlier there, about having quality people in good positions so they know their role, their job, their work. How do you roll this out to the Caribbean region? I believe there's 31... countries within the Caribbean, the CFU, is that right? 31?
Yeah, 31.
Yeah. So, I mean, my God, that's a hell of a lot of islands to deal with, but how on earth are you rolling that out?
Well, firstly, I'm starting here at home.
Yeah.
And I believe that if we can set examples,
very good,
that others will follow. The thing is that we are still in the amateurish kind of thinking, where we tend to employ the people who support us and that kind of thing, who not necessarily maybe
good point
maybe proficient.
Yes.
So basically, we have to make sure that we are getting the right people in the right positions, even if we have to look outside for now. And get them to come in and train our people, because it is a vast, vast difference when you visit a national association, a small national association like Belgium, in the UK, and the way that they do business and the way that we tend to do business. And that isn't true. For I mean, I was around for a long time, and I thought that, you know, I was the cat's meow. But basically, in traveling and visiting people, I realized that there is so much to learn. I say that we in the Caribbean are at least 30 to 40 years behind.
Yes, I agree.
With that we organize football. But we are going to get there. We are getting assistance from FIFA and CONCACAF. And I would really like the governments to support us. If the finances are not there, support us by helping us to put proper programs in the primary and secondary schools, things like that. Football is very important to the Caribbean because with so many young people playing, has so much concern for the health and nutritional habits of people in the Caribbean. I think that the governments should take a special interest in this game because it is the one game that can move and make a difference to our young people and the future.
I agree. This is a great point because I sat last night, Randy, and I watched the Super Bowl final up in the United States there. And when you go back 6-7 years ago, I think now, the movie that came out, Concussion.
Oh, yeah.
And you had all of these parents that were worried and concerned about their kids playing Americanized football, where the clashing of bodies and heads knocking together with helmets on. So a lot of these have moved away from that, and they're coming to what they call soccer, our football.
Okay. Yeah. I see it, big and bold.
Huge. It's huge. And I'm saying, you've just said it yourself earlier on, that there's been a long lot of years of now development. They're getting to where they want to be the next time round. We are within the CONCACAF region. But because of the development that's happened there, you made a great point early. When you think of, and I never looked at it this way at all, Leah have gone down, so actually moving people in and around the region is a nightmare because you have got to go in and out of Miami, the cost of that. Clubs haven't got it. Here in Trinidad and Tobago, we launched the league last week. It comes in play second week in March. But it's still up in the air. It's still brand new. It's nowhere near the customary leagues that we watch, Premier League on television and all of that. And having corporates buy into it is one thing, but at what levels that they're prepared to buy into it at are something else,
exactly.
because they
exactly.
just they don't see it. But
right.
you're bringing out great points there that I want the listening public out there that have got a great opportunity listening to you tonight to understand the issues and problems that we've all got within the region to get our football off the ground and have it sustainable for the youngsters that we got. Because too often, and I've seen this in Trinidad, we are, politics is in everything, of course it is, but we unfortunately forget the youngsters on the street, the kids that matter.
Right. Yeah.
And we've not given them that opportunity.
And then the thing is, we are losing them at a critical age between 17 and 22. I mean, how many great players in Trinidad stop playing football because they don't see any real and tangible benefit.
Yes.
And it is a pity. We have to really look to see how we can fill those gaps.
Yes, I agree. We've been looking at, and this is something I've bounced off of Adrian, whereby, and you said it earlier on, you've got lots of community coaches that might not be qualified, might not have done their homework with regard to coaching football. But nevertheless, they're doing it because of the love of their community, the love of the kids within their community. We're trying to bring these academies together with schools, liaison with the local professional clubs, so you get a collaboration across the board to try and fast-track these kids to a level where they might then get an opportunity to get that scholarship, to get that professional contract on the outside, Adrian. What do you think?
Yeah, Terry, and Randy has touched it. I am really excited to see all his plans develop because it's really important that we get kids playing football in the Caribbean territories. That's That's important. He spoke about Liat, something that we ignored because other listeners or people on the side of the street will say, well, Randy ain't getting this done or that done. But to be fair, that was spot on there, Mr. President.
But let me add this comment from someone who messaged on WhatsApp. They say one thing is that they don't have enough players functioning as professionals from a younger level. So I know you all mentioned that having kids, you know, being trained properly.
Yeah.
But not just kids, you know, start them off from young. And the person said the only way we can do this is by placing them in a professional setup with professional coaches, etc. That's a very good point because, I mean, yes, we have other kids, you know, now starting to play football or even starting to play. But let's look at a younger age as well, so we could break them in and mold them into being a professional football player.
But to be honest, Kari, that's what Randy touched on. He said they have created a lot of development relationships in the UK. He actually said surprisingly in the UK and in the US. And Randy, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I'm seeing a lot of young kids that is participating, not only in Barbados League, but we are seeing it in Anguilla. Mm. We are seeing it in St. Vincent. We are seeing it's happening in St. Lucia. So there's a lot of young children being exposed to professional football We shouldn't say professional football. Let's say semi-professional football.
Right.
Because a lot of teams, countries don't pay.
Right.
But they are being exposed. But most importantly, Anna, before we close the show, it's Mr. President, I am asking you to please continue the great work and ensure that we have a lot of coaching education. Because without coaching education, we will see USA, Canada, and these teams hitting us 6 and 7 goals, and then we will blame the coach.
Yeah.
But there's not sufficient coaching education in Caribbean.
Yeah.
So, Mr. President, we thank you for joining us on 106.5 Freedom, and again on Offside on this Monday. We need to do our round two.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. And
we need to do a second half.
Yeah, second half.
anytime I'm available, I'll be happy to, you know, have a discussion with you.
Brilliant, Randy. That was very informative. Love what you said there. And I'm hoping the kids out there listening take note.
All right. Thank you very much, Randy. We hope to see you guys see you next time. All right. Thank you for being on Offside. Have a good one.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Guys, this is Offside, just about 7:05. We are going to jump on a break. While we come back, we're going to be continuing the discussion.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. It's Freedom 106.5 FM, and you are on Offside with Adrian Romaine, Terry Fenwick, Kari V. Check the energy. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling that energy?
Feeling it.
It's just about 7:10. So what? So the interview with Mr. Harris. He is the president of the CFU. So tell me, what are your thoughts on this interview? What can we take back?
I think it's wonderful that we've got a guy at the forefront of Caribbean football that has got the kids at heart. He recognises the issues and problems that we've got, because football today, Kerry, is about development programmes.
Mm.
And the rest of the world are throwing money. The United States, Canada, they're throwing money at development programmes, trying to bring their kids through the ranks quicker. And you can see it in their performances, their results coming out of World Cup. Look how well they did. They horsed the World Cup in 2026. And I think we've got 31 islands. How do you get around when there's no transport? Liat have cut out, they're not doing it any longer. It's hard to galvanise and bring these islands together. But Randy is working hard behind the scenes, trying to pull people together. It can't be easy for him, because politics plays a big part in football, and my God, we've seen that firsthand here in the Caribbean and in Trinidad and Tobago. But he's doing his utmost to bring the best out of the sport for the islands, and I think that's a wonderful gesture that he's
doing. Terry, I think he touched on a lot of trending topics, and he made tremendous points because we have seen the struggle, especially during COVID, and something that we were aware of is that Barbados and Trinidad and Tobago restrictions were really tough.
Yeah.
So now seeing them return to play, it's very impressive. And I will say this is their second season because they had one before the Christmas.
Yeah.
And now they have restarted. So it's really interesting how we look at things. And that's what I said earlier on in one of our shows. We cannot based ourselves as I'm talking about Trinidad and Tobago as if we are still going through the 2006 campaign.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When we have countries like Barbados, yes. St. Lucia, Anguilla is entering their second season after COVID and we are yet to enter our season.
Well, Adrian, I agree with you, and I think this is something that we on the ground here in Trinidad and Tobago need to recognise. Football at pro league level, which it was before COVID, was running for a maximum of 3.5 to 4 months, Kerry.
What?
And that means our kids on the ground there that want to be that footballer, want to get outside of Trinidad into bigger and better leagues around the world, they're limited to 4 months football. What are they doing for the next 8 months of the year? So you've got club owners, the management of the league structure. We're just not geared up. We're not professional enough. We're nowhere near a professional league, if you like. Recognise, in the UK, this is England and Wales, there's 3,500 leagues. That's not teams. 3,500 leagues. Now, the top five are paying leagues.
Right.
So you get decent money playing for the top five leagues leading up to Premier League. But the development programme that's below all of this is your community academy partnering with the local school, so they're working together with the best kids, making sure that they're competitive, bringing them up through the ranks there. Then the schools are operating with the local professional clubs. So for me, brought up in the northeast of England, I was with CM Arba through my academy, through my school, into Sunderland Football Club, where you've then got professional coaches coaching kids, 9, 10, 11-year-olds. It's like, wow. And because you're looking at top coaches that are associated with professional clubs, the kids listen to every word you say and they do everything. It's brilliant. But we just haven't got that here in the Caribbean. It's financially strapping, and as yes, we're getting funding from FIFA. FIFA are pushing hard, but there's only so much.
Yeah, correct. Because I know about the Big Five and the Intercol, and I have been seeing over the past few years that there are a lot of skillful kids, children going to school, and I'm saying, but how can we take this talent and mold them and put them in the bigger leagues so that when it's time for us to have a World Cup, we have players who are ready to hit the ground running, going with it, you know?
Kari, I don't see... It sounds good. And that's the reality. Locally, it sounds good. It sounds good seeing a 14-year-old great skill in Etihad Savannah or CIC Grounds. But the reality is, what happens to that 14-year-old when he turns 17? Have you got the opportunity? And we're seeing it at our national program as well.
Yeah.
We have players that is still part of our national program that is ages 38 and 39.
Yeah.
When we are getting ready for a 2026 World Cup, I found out earlier today that a kid, Gary Griffith Jr., he got left out of the squad. And he's one of the players that have been in the national pool for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So he have been left out of the squad for no reason, because the coach has no reasoning.
But that that ain't sounding right to me, you know. That ain't sounding right at all, because I mean, because I know of him because of the potential and because of you all, when you all explained to us, you know, how good he was when we were speaking about it some time ago. But to not be on the team.
Yeah, but surprisingly, he got left out from the squad against St. Martin, which was actually a practice match.
Right.
The coach selects a new squad and doesn't include him in this new squad. So what is the reason why he was left out? And that's my problem. So these kids now, is being demotivated by these coaches who do not have the coaching education to manage these youngsters. And and that's where we are in Trinidad and Tobago.
But how we could fix that, Adrian? Terry, how can we, how, where do we start to fix that problem? Because we know where's the problem, you know.
Yeah.
But how do we go about fixing it?
People need to be brave.
Yeah.
They need to be brave. It have a lot to say. They need to be brave. They need to stop entertaining the ones that is part of the problem. And I said it weeks ago, Carrie. Mm. Yeah. We need to stop entertaining the ones that is part of the problem. For example, Republic Cup was run superb by a company.
I remember that.
Last year.
Yeah.
Now it's under the TTFA. Why are you putting Republic Cup under the TTFA?
Yeah.
That is depressing.
Why are they dipping their hands in the cookie jar?
Thank you.
Yeah, I can't agree with that at all. Across the board, you know, we've got a normalisation committee that have been in there for nearly 3 years, and football is just about to get back off the ground. And we're already reading about a number of these clubs that are involved in the new TT Premier League that are struggling to get their act together to start the season.
Correct.
Wow.
But coming back to one of the points, Kerry, you made earlier, and I think this is a big point in football. When you look at the stars that have left the Caribbean, they have been community stars like your Dwight York, your Russell Latapies, top players that have got great personal skill sets. The world of football as we see it today is changing. It's different because unless you've come through a development program where them coaches that have had you for 4 to 6 years have now rubbed off the rough edges and made you into a top centre forward, a top centre back, a top goalkeeper. Because by the time these kids are now 12, 13, 14, they're young professionals and they know their position within the team mechanism, and that's how they've got to move forward today. It's not like you don't have too many times now you have a scout on the side of the football field watching schoolboy football. Unless you're coming through a development programme, forget it.
Yeah, and Terry, to be honest, when Randy mentioned the amount of money federations receive in the Caribbean, I was like, wow. And we are struggling to even put together national camps for kids.
Yes.
You're talking about $5 million per year.
Yep.
That's a lot of money. Thank you. And he said it right. He said it. He asked the question, what company is bringing in that type of income per year?
And he also said, and I thought this was one of the best points that Randy made, was, and he said it himself, he'd made one or two decisions back in Barbados himself, it's who you appoint, what is their professionalism, what is their expertise, knowledge of the job before they go into it.
Right.
So when you appoint somebody, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
So it's not a friend of a friend of a friend.
And that is what's happening here.
Absolutely.
Trinidad is very small. So, yes. I know somebody who's he could coach him and trimming, bam.
Yeah.
And now when that happens, it kind of take off football from here to all the way down at the bottom. But we need to, I wonder if we need to really sit down and see how we could get, because we have so much talent here, Terry.
Well, I look at, and this is a great balancing one for me. So Argentina, they won 8 under 20 World Cups in 12 years. This is a relatively small population. This was about 15 to 20 million people, where you've got Brazil in South America, 350 million. So what they did was, if you look at the Caribbean and the Central American sides, so you could go through Costa Rica, Honduras, Panama, they've had Argentine coaches go in there for 3 to 5 years development programs. And all of these teams now were very similar, where they've got a handful, 4 or 5 senior professionals within the national squad. But the players now are all 17, 18 through to about 22.
Right.
So they're very young, agile, virile, top teams that they've developed through this same Argentine program that they've had. We're missing out on that.
Yeah.
And the islands that haven't had that development program think they know everything, push their own people in there to do these jobs that they're not physically up for.
Right.
We're now coming second on everything.
Yeah.
We're losing everything.
Yeah. And on a lighter note, Terry, we must mention before the show wraps up our rising star.
Well, rising star, and this kid, my God, what a humble young man, what a lovely fella.
Mm-hmm.
His family, in fact, Adrian, are nice.
Yeah, very together. Nice people.
And Levi Garcia, who's playing at a level in Greece that is first class. But I said it already, humble, listens to his coach, does as he's told.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect professional. What an example he is for young Trinidad and Tobagonian young footballers out there. If there's somebody that you need to keep an eye on, watch out for, lead by example, this is Levi Garcia.
Wow.
What a player. He's done great things. And he's such a nice kid to sit down and talk with. He goes through what happens with his coach in Greece, how he works, what he's looking to achieve. So you can actually talk to him and go through his game plan and learn from him as well as his coaches back in Greece there. This is a guy, I had him with my national side when I was involved. He played on the very left-footed, great speed, strength, could move the ball, and that was like stuck to his left foot. And in many respects, I used to look at him, oh my God, I'm kicking myself for saying this already, but he was like a Diego Maradona. And Diego Maradona wasn't the tallest, but he was strong. That is Levi. That's Levi. Quick as lightning. Diego Maradona, Levi. And when he's running at speed, that ball's like it's stuck on a piece of string 1 foot away, literally 1 foot, 1 yard away from that left foot. And you can't get it off him. And if you go to tackle him, penalty, free kicks, what a great player.
Wow.
And I would hope that the listeners out there, get your kids to take note of Levi. Get online, check him out, see what he's doing.
Nice.
What a player.
I have a message here on WhatsApp. Hi, everyone. What's your take on the VAR decision against Arsenal this weekend? Probably you can shed some light, Terry.
Yeah, I thought it was a very poor decision. He looked like he was onside to me. I look at Arsenal, because I'm a Spurs fan, of course. I'm not keen for them to win, but I think they've had the two or three terrible decisions go against them with VAR. And certainly with the Brentford game, I thought the Brentford goal was offside, and that was allowed, and cost them 2 points.
Wow. All right, well, I hope that explanation that explanation about what happened with the VAR the Arsenal game.
Too often now we're having these issues and problems.
But how though? That's supposed to be something.
Absolutely. It's
like
meant to
on
be
point.
Clear cut. Once they make it, it's meant to be perfect. And we're having so many decisions. It was the week before, it was the Manchester United game. Was Rashford offside? Yes, he was.
Yes, he was.
Was he interfering with player? Yes, he was. He was right in front of the goalkeeper. But they still allowed the goal. Now they've got rules and regulations that they've got to abide by. They've all got to stick to the same game plan.
Right. But what's your take on it, Adrian?
Yeah, well, I agree. It was a strange decision. Nevertheless, VAR has got it wrong once again for this season, and I don't think it's
you
it's,
look like you're looking out for them to get a wrong decision, you know, Adrian.
I think VAR is really and truly messing up, and VAR is offside at the moment.
Right. But here's what, right? If VAR makes a decision that is not quite correct, let's see, what happens next? Is it that you have to go with what VAR says?
They've got to go with it.
You have to go with it.
Serious? No challenge in that either?
Kerry, how I would look at this, Adrian, and I think this is a big point. If you put an ex-footballer in there to run VAR, an ex-footballer will get all the decisions right because he's been there, seen it, done it himself, and he knows what the player's trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Is he trying to get a penalty? Is he trying to nick something for nothing? Was there any real contact there?
Mm.
An ex-footballer will give you that decision immediately.
Right.
When you've got an ex-referee, they're taking forever to make a decision these days.
What?
You've got games. When we go back to World Cup, World Cup was first half, we've got an add-on 7-8 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what?
That's plenty.
End of the game, 10 and 11 minutes add on time at the end of the game because of VAR changing, stopping the game here and what. I think that is rubbish. Put the right people, ex-players, into positions where they can make them decisions quickly and move the game on. Because I guarantee they'll be 100% right.
Oh, because I didn't know that it used to have someone in particular dealing with the VAR.
Yeah.
I didn't know it's referees, right?
Yes,
it's ex-referees.
Yeah. Ex-referees.
But you made sense, Terry, because, I mean, you would want somebody there. Yes, I know a referee is not... I know a referee knows his stuff.
Yeah.
But for an ex-player, they would know because they're on the field and they have experience and, you know, thinking about, hey, well, this supposed, you know, this went wrong and this didn't, you know?
They've been there, seen it, done it.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And whenever you go to, if we're all watching football on TV now.
Mm.
When anything goes to the halftime break and you've got your people speaking, talking football in the break, invariably it's ex-footballers.
Right.
And they always get it right.
Right.
Because they know what's going on there. They know what's in the player's mind. If he's trying to nick a penalty, a free kick or whatever, was it handball inside the box? Was his arm inside or outside of the size of his body? All of them things are meant to be crystal clear so these referees don't make any mistakes and can make a quick decision. It's not happening.
Wow. All right, guys, it's just about 7:28. We are 2 minutes away from the close of today's episode of Offside.
Yeah.
But before we leave, Terry and Adrian, give us an idea of what we will be speaking about next time or what game should we look forward to?
Well, there's a huge game coming up, of course, in the Premier League. Arsenal take on Manchester City. And that could be winner takes all. Premier League title could be right there in this game because...
Wow.
We've just watched Arsenal squander 5 to 6 points over the last week, Adrian.
Yeah.
And this is a big game at the Emirates where Arsenal must win it, in my opinion, to get that distance between them and Man City again. If Man City were to roll them over, which I suspect will happen, I think Man City will go on to win the league yet again.
Wow.
And Terry, Saturday we have Aston Villa versus Arsenal.
Yeah.
Brentford, they play Crystal Palace. Brighton versus Fulham.
Yeah.
Chelsea versus Southampton. Everton versus Leeds. Nottingham Forest versus Man City. That's an interesting clash, Terry.
Yeah.
Wolves versus Bournemouth. Newcastle versus Liverpool.
Hey, Newcastle boy.
And Sunday, I think it's a big day. Because it's Terry's day. Man U versus Leicester.
Yeah.
And Spurs versus West Ham. So
there's West big clash.
I'm really interested to see these results
these
next
games,
week.
So I'm just looking at the top of the Premier League here. And three teams that have really stuck out to me. And I'm thinking, wow, are people recognising where they are? So in sixth position, you've got Brighton and Hove Albion. One of the teams that you'd be expecting to be down in the relegation battle.
Mm.
Fulham, who were down in the relegation battle, in seventh position, and Brentford in eighth. In them top three positions, you've got three sides there, and recognise that you've got Liverpool in them, underneath them. You've got Leicester, who have won the Premier League, below them. Chelsea below them. This is like, wow, this is... tells me how competitive the Premier League is.
Wow.
Yeah, and Terry, I was watching the table, and I'm saying that maybe Liverpool or Chelsea saying that Manchester United or Newcastle is in unfamiliar position.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. But the reality is these teams are getting results, and we look forward to next week.
Wow. Well, I can't wait. So next week will be same time, same place right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. This is Offside with Kari V, Terry Fenwick, and Adrian Romain. So on behalf of my co-hosts.
Hold the line.
Get tight.
Y'all, we getting up and getting moving. Have a good one. We'll see you guys next week, Monday.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.